got 11 this morning, I do. You rang it red. He said, honey, can you love his dead? I got 11 this morning. How do you ring it red? You just say, hurry, hurry. I call it, can you love his dead? Oh, I grabbed up my suitcase, took her down the road. When I got there, she's laying on the cooling board. I grabbed up my suitcase, and I said, I took her down the road. I said, but when I got there, she's laying on a cooling board. Well, I walked up right close, looked down in her face. The good old gal gonna be here the judgment day. I walked up right close, I said, I looked down in her face. I said, the good old girl gonna lay in the judgment day. The back of the 10,000 people standing round the burying ground. I didn't know I loved her till I let her down. Looked like 10,000 was standing on the burying ground. You know I didn't love her until I began to let her down. Well, I fooled up mom, I slowly walked away. I say farewell, honey, I'll see you judgment day. Yeah, oh yes, I walked away. I said, farewell, farewell, and I'll see you judgment day. You know I didn't feel so bad till the good old sun went down. I didn't have a soul to throw my arms around. I didn't feel so bad until the good old sun went down. To love someone don't love you, ain't satisfaction, don't care what you do. Yeah, it's so hard to love someone don't love you. You don't look like it ain't satisfaction, don't care what you do. Well, I got up this morning to break a day, just hugging the pillow. She used to lay, I said, soon this morning, yes, at the break of the day. You know I'd hug in the pillow, oh, how my good gal used to lay. I got up this morning feeling round for my shoe. You know I must have the walking blues. Soon this morning, feeling out from my shoes. Yeah, I don't know about that. I must have the walking blues. Oh, hush. Thought I heard her call my name. It wasn't so loud, so nice and plain.
Hi, you are listening to Literary Soundtrack, and I'm Lilian Rivera, and we are broadcasting from Radio Sombra here on Espacio 1839. And it is, if you don't know what Literary Soundtrack is, a monthly radio show where words and music collide. Each month, or once a month, we feature interviews with authors sprinkled with a little bit of the music that inspired their latest project. And it's May 10th. Happy Tuesday. I hope you're enjoying the beginning of the evening. Now, this is this. I don't know if you heard that song we just played. I love. It's so amazing. And it's our second, it's by Sunhouse, and it's our second Sunhouse song, which is pretty amazing. So, and that track was called Death Letter Blues. And it is the first song that we're going to be playing that was picked by our featured guest, our author this month. And that is Ayize Jama Everett. Now, Ayize writes these amazing kind of like fantasy speculative fiction books that right now they're under Small Beer Press. And it's a series. The one that we're talking about is called The Liminal War. And that's under Small Beer Press. But I met Ayize, I think it's almost been a year since we first met. We did a reading together at the Central Public Library, and that was pretty cool. And I read this book, and it's amazing. You guys got to pick it up. And we got to speak to him, and we spoke. He's from Harlem, so he's a New York guy. And we talked about Harlem. We talked about going to boarding school. We talked about music, which permeates throughout the novel. It's pretty good. So I want to start us off and just have him. Oh, first, before we do that, I almost forgot. Let me just give you a little background on Ayize. He was born in 1974. He hails from Harlem of old. In his time on the planet, he's traveled extensively throughout the world, Malaysia, East and North Africa, Mexico, New Hampshire, before settling temporarily in Northern California. With master's degrees in psychology and divinity, he's taught at the graduate and high school level and worked as a therapist. He's the author of three novels, The Liminal People, The Liminal War, and The Entropy of Bones, as well as an upcoming graphic novel with illustrator John Jennings entitled Box of Bones. I'm super excited about that. When he's not writing, teaching, or sermonizing, he's usually practicing his aim. Uh-oh. And a little bit about Liminal War. It's under Small Beer Press. You should definitely check it out. A Liminal People novel. Taggart wants to look after his family. So when his adopted daughter disappears, he only has one option. Find her. There's something wrong in this world, and Taggart must do what he must. I read bodies the way master musicians read music. The Liminal War is a propulsive novel that starts with a kidnapping in London and takes off running. Taggart is a man with a questionable past and the ability to hurt or heal with his thoughts alone. When his adopted daughter goes missing, he immediately suspects the hand of an old enemy. In order to find her, Taggart assembles a team of friends, family, and new allies who don't quite trust he has left his violent times behind. But their search leads them to an unexpected place, the past. Getting there is hard, being there is harder, and their journey has a price that is higher than any of us can afford. Ooh, it sounds good, because it is. It's really good. It's really super high action, fast-paced, definitely. So let's listen to Ayize speak on the things that I love, X-Men and Blade. And we can end his experience in boarding school, and we'll listen to another track that he selected. Okay, hold on.
When we first met, we did this reading at the Central Public Library, and there was an instant kind of New York connection because you grew up in Harlem. Exactly. Like, we both have like a similar background. Like, you grew up in Harlem, I grew up in the Bronx, but we grew up like in the 70s and 80s. Now, can you just tell me a little bit about your upbringing? Like, what were you like? Like, I know you've mentioned in interviews you were like an outsider sort of.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, my family was like very Black nationalist, Black Panthers were kind of like weak sauce compared to like my family. But I wasn't that kid, you know. I was like more of the geek kid, you know. I was like always reading comics. Like, I was a Black nerd before that was even considered cool. You know, so I was more of that kid. I hung out in the library a lot for most of my like young life. And then, I don't know, around 13 or 14, I started hanging out more, in the village, and started like going to places like CBGBs and stuff, and just kind of getting more of the that like that Manhattan sort of kid feel. And then like right when I was like really, really into it, I went off to boarding school. So
yeah. Well, what was boarding school like?
Oh, it was like a sea of vanilla ice cream, and I was a chocolate chip. I like barely survived that place. I mean, I still have like
school?
Two or three. Go on.
I was going to ask you, like, what school was it?
It was Proctor Academy in Andover, New Hampshire. And you know, it's like, it's not like they were bad people or anything, but I just don't think they're like, oh, okay. So I went, right. And my first like English class, I go in and like, I've always been like reading like everything that I could get my hands on. So like, mm-hmm. I go to my first English class and I was like, oh, you know, I've read all these books, so I think I should be in the next English class. And the teacher literally said to me, he's like, well, we read differently here. And I was like, well, okay, but I mean, tell me, because I thought there's only one way to read. You know, so it took a second, you know, and then I was like, he's like, well, do you know what a plot is? I'm like, yeah, because I'm not a moron, dude. What's up? So, you know, like I had to sort of had to do that dance for a little bit. The one good thing I'll say about it is like by the end of it, I'd gotten to travel in like France and Morocco and like met some really cool people that like are still big in my life. So I got to give it that. But yeah, it's kind of it was an interesting time.
Comic books and the X-Men were like a big thing. Now I'm curious. So how do you feel about the movies?
The great thing about literature is that you can take it and you can make it your own, right? So like for me, the X-Men were people of color, period.
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. you know, and like, you know, Cyclops was just light-skinned, you know what I mean? Like all they were dealing with was being in a society that didn't like them, that didn't appreciate them, even though they had these amazing gifts and talents. And that just sounded like people of color to me, period. You know, so like you give that idea to Hollywood and Hollywood like has no choice but to make it white because it has to play to Des Moines. Do you know what I mean? Like they don't know how to think of like they don't know how to think of people of color stories as being accessible to the broader public. So that's their limitation. That being said, I mean, like, I go and I'm like, yes, have things blow up, please. Yes, have, you know, like I'm okay with all of it because it's like they're doing what they know how to do and they're really good at making explosions and like cool one-liners. But, you know, the number one for me will always be Blade because like the Blade movie like had like a black male of color and he was kicking ass and there were the explosions and all the other stuff. So it's like, you know, X-Men, cool. You know, yeah, you throw one black chick in there with a mohawk and you're like, hey, look, we're doing diversity. I'm like, whatever. You know, it's cute to watch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Blade, I don't know how many times I've seen that movie. It's just, yeah, it's one of my best. So I know. How did you make that leap to fiction? Like, when did you become like start writing? I mean, did that happen at boarding school?
Oh, I mean, you know, I say always, but like probably since like third grade, I've always been reading and I've always been writing. I just didn't know what I was writing. Do you know, like at first I was writing like comic book scripts and they just look like reams and reams of dialogue because I didn't understand. I'd never seen a comic book script. So I didn't understand that you actually have to describe what's going on the pages, you know? Then when I was a kid, I started going to things like the St. Mark's Theater. And like my family was like big in the arts movement, like the black arts movement in New York. So I was always going to like, you know, dances. Like my uncle Jalone was like one of the big people and like, well, like founded Dance Brazil, you know, and brought Capoeira to the U.S. One of the first people to bring Capoeira to the U.S. And so I'd like always go see his shows. And, you know, all my cousins were like dancing at Dance Theater of Harlem. And so it was like, you know, I was in that world. And novels, you know, now I I felt like novels were something that you did once you knew what you were talking about. And so I started writing plays because I was like, well, anybody can tell somebody else what to say. And so I started writing plays. And then my first year at Proctor, actually, they did a production of one of my plays, which is like the most embarrassing thing now, because as I think about it now, I'm like, oh, my God, that was very weird. It was like experimental theater shit, you know. But like I grew up like going to like St. Mark's Theater in New York, you know. So I'd always use like avant-garde shit, you know, like some weird Twyla Tharp dancing. Oh, can I swear on this? I can't swear on this, can I?
Oh no, yeah, you definitely can.
Okay. But yeah, I used to like see all these like Twyla Tharp things, like with like people dancing on beds and stuff. And so I like wrote this insane thing about like a convict who was about to die and he was like being put on trial about like all of his crimes and stuff. And like, I know the like boarding school kids of New Hampshire were like, what the hell is this? But you know, it was my fun. But yeah, I think what happened was like my senior year, basically like I was losing my mind at that school, and they were kind of like, yeah, you're going to kill someone or something if you stay here. Luckily, we have an abroad program. You should go to France. And I was like, okay. And so I went to Avignon, and I started hanging out with all these Algerians and Moroccans, and I finally felt like I had something to say. So I started, like, writing about them and, like fictionalized, but, like, their lives and, like, my interactions with them and, like, what that was like. And it kind of, you know, dropped the seeds of things that would, you know, 15 iterations later would look like the first draft of Liminal People.
So was it always speculative, you know, like elements in your writing, or did you start off like just writing just realistic, like contemporary stuff?
Nah, I mean, just now I'm, you know, touching on some of that contemporary realistic stuff. I think it bores me. I feel like the play with language can sometimes be a little bit too precious to me, and the abandonment of plot really irks me. Like I feel like if a reader is going to give you that time to like sit down and turn off the television and turn off the music and like look at your page, then you owe it to them to do something more than describe the internal life of some, you know, middle-aged woman who just got a divorce. You know what I mean? Like, and I know that there's stories other than that, but like so much of popular, you know, non-genre fiction is that, like, if you take the suburbs away from like the modern narrative, what the hell do you have? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And like I did this experiment like a couple of years ago where like I for some reason subscribed to The New Yorker, and I read like every fiction piece in The New Yorker, and I was trying to just figure out like what it was about this, like, you know, Iowa School of Writing, you know, Paris Review, New Yorker thing that was appealing that I didn't understand, and I still can't name it, you know. It just, the closest I can say is like it's this almost peak whiteness, you know, that like I just I'm not invested in. Now watch, I'll never get published by The New Yorker.
And now you never will.
Smoke 'em if you got 'em. Drink your glasses to the bottom and toast me on another year. Another year of hope, another year of holding on. For you drinkers by day, you were bastards by dawn, and I hope I will see you soon. And I'll be home, come hell or high water, and I know I will see you soon. Gather round friends and neighbors who make your living by labor, and share with me this little time. This little time that we have left to
to have a drink and catch our breath. Well, it might just be what saves our lives, and I hope I will see you soon. And I'll be home, come hell or high water, and I know I will see you soon. Oh, smoke 'em if you got 'em. Drink your glasses to the bottom and listen to the howling dogs. And oh, how it pleases me to be in such company, and I'm so glad our paths have crossed, and I hope I will see you soon. And I'll be home, come hell or high water, and I know I will see you soon. Oh, and I'll be home, come hell or high water, and I know I will see you soon.
Now, that was beautiful, and the song is titled Hell or High Water, and it's by William Elliott Whitmore. Love that. And that's a track selected by Aize Jama Everett, the author that we are featuring this month. And he, like I mentioned before, he has a book that's called The Liminal War, and that's what we're going to be talking about next. You're tuned to Literary Soundtrack. This is Lillian Rivera. And we're going to tune right back to Aize as he speaks on introducing the Liminal series with Taggart, which I kind of love, and the influence of pulp in his work.
You said that that was the beginning of sort of the Liminal series, and of course, this is definitely what I wanted to talk about. Is your novels. Now, the first, it's like a series, and now the first one was Liminal People, and that was published in 2009. You self-published that, and then there's The Liminal War and The Entropy of Bones. And where did the impetus of it, of that story, of that the kernel, and it did begin with your travel. But was there something else? Was there like books that you were reading? Was there something that you were searching for?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like part of it was, I think I've told this story in other places, like I wrote this other novel that was like all about the sort of musician who was trying to heal the world. And I sent it out to a bunch of people, and they were like, some people were like, oh, it's too sci-fi, you should make it more like realistic. And some people were like, oh, it's too realistic, you need to make it more fantastical and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. And then one person said, you know, can you just write a simpler story? And I was like, And like, I'd never heard that before. Like, just, you know, but then there's this like thing in recovery. I'm not in recovery, but I used to like hang out with a bunch of people who were, and there's this like thing, keep it simple, stupid, KISS. And I was like, oh, I like that. So I was like, oh, I can tell a simple story. Like, I can tell the story of, like, a guy looking for a girl. Because, you know, I was single at the time. And so I was like, I can tell that story. And I can tell the story of the guy who let the girl get away. Because I've done that more times than God knows. You know, and I was like, and, you know, my thing is, like, I like... superheroes are sort of just a metaphor to me. They're just a way of talking about things that everyone goes through. And so I wanted to write about someone who wasn't living up to his potential. Who wasn't living up to his potential, because at the time I was sort of like just trying really hard to make a mark in some way, shape, or form. So I have this healer who only knows how to hurt, you know? And so those are like the beginning grains. And then there's this theme that comes through everything with me, which is just family of choice, you know, and just, I just find that to be so, so important, you know? So yeah, those are the initial seeds. And then it just grew out of that.
Well, there's definitely, like, I totally agree with you about that, like finding your family or creating family or what does that mean, and also loyalty. But there's also that a theme, like a definite thread of spirituality. And
yeah.
You were, I know that your background, you have like a master's degree in divinity and also clinical
yep.
psychology. So
yep.
there is that important, like there is that thread of spirituality. I mean, can you talk about that a little bit? Is that something that you're even thinking about
sure.
when you're writing?
I mean, I think about it every day of my life. I feel like there's an, you know, to believe that human beings are the pinnacle of intelligence, compassion, or power in the universe is an incredibly arrogant belief. You know, it's really, really narcissistic. And I don't claim to have any special insight as into like what comes next or what is lords above humans or anything like that. But I think, you know, the people that explore that question of like, what's bigger, better, greater than me, like what can I rely on when I have nothing? Those stories really fascinate me. And that's, you know, part of my master in divinity was looking at people in positions where without any power and how they come to have a place of faith. They say like, you know, there's no atheist in foxholes. But like there's another thing, like, you know, you find spirituality in three places: when you hatch, when you match, and when you dispatch. So when people are born, you find spirituality. People, you know, agree to couple or get married, you find some spirituality, religion. When people die, you find it. And so there is a lot of that's those are the sort of the loops I was playing with. Now, naturally, because I'm a morbid individual from time to time, death is like is a bigger presence in that first book. But there's also some birthing of family, you know what I mean? And there's also some joining together. But my, you know, my thing is like when you're the biggest badass on the planet, or you think you are, you know, what happens when that which you love like dies or fails? Like who do you call on then? And who you call on at that point, that's your God. You know, call it whatever you will, but that's your God. So for the main character, you know, it's him finding a new God. And then as the series goes on, you know, there is a named grand mover, if you will, of these liminal people and of this world that has a will of its own that they're sort of trapped in. Or I don't know, that's the sort of exploration now of like, if you believe in free will and you believe in a power greater than yourself, how do those two things connect? Like, does your higher power give you free will? Or is every choice that you made already predetermined by your higher power?
Right.
And so, like, as the series goes on, you'll see Taggart sort of struggling with that a lot.
Well, let's talk about Taggart. And he's, like, the main – he's our main person. And what
dude.
I found really – he's a dude. Like, what I found about Taggart – and I don't know if this is something that – anyone else have noticed, but there was something about him that gave that resonate, like it seemed very pulp, the way he spoke.
Yeah.
I thought of like Mickey Spillane. I don't know why. I don't even read.
Oh my God, I love
book.
You. Yes.
But
no.
I had that feeling of like, this is sort of like, he's like a Mickey Spillane kind of person.
Yes.
Did I nail it?
Totally. So understand that like, Hammer used to be this like TV show, and as a kid Stacy Keach was on it, and I used to love it, like absolutely adore it. And I've read all the Mickey Spillane books. I love pulp culture because it was a time when America read, like all of America read. So reading was the populace. Like it's one thing to be, I think like it's one thing to know how to read, it's another thing to be literate. You know, to be literate to me means you read on a regular basis. And there was a time when America was literate, where people would dive deep into books. But the books that they read, sorry, New Yorker again, was not that like foo-foo fancy BS. It was the like, It was romance novels, and it was detective novels, and it was science fiction, and it was fantasy. It was all that stuff that people would read.
Right.
So Taggart, like, for me, definitely comes from that. I feel like pulp is, like, very populist, and I wanted this, like, the original version, like, when I self-published it, the book was, like, I don't know, I think 8.5 by 5 or by 6, like, a super small book to sort of replicate that paperback, you know, put it in your back pocket, read it on your lunch break sort of thing, you know?
Right. That's awesome. I do love him. I mean, the great thing about him is that he does have these powers, or, you know, the power to heal, that he's sort of like almost taking on, you know, people as you get in for the first book, for the book that I read was The Liminal War. And as you're mm-hmm. getting, the first thing you're noticing is that he's like, this is an interaction between him and this one person who found him, and is like, you know, I mm-hmm. have this, and you're going to take care of me, and you're going to heal me. And it's like, where's the money? You know, it was more like,
right.
This is what I do.
Yeah.
Which I love, because it was like very, you know, black, like very underground, kind of like, you know, I have these services, you know. And then after that, you are kind of following him throughout this kind of underground world where he is, it's all based in reality, but this is a world that not that many people are even noticing, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's part of that spirituality part again, like, you know, the occult just means, like, you know, the hidden, the unseen. And I feel like a lot of that, I don't feel like spirituality is, or like, you know, that mystic stuff or whatever we want to call it, I don't think it's very far away from us at any time. I think it's what we choose to see, you know, and what we choose to pay attention to. And I think with Taggart and that whole crew, you know, there's a reason, you know, the Miko's people are on, like, Yopai Island in the middle of the Thames. You know, it's like, it can, you know, they're right there. Everyone can see them if they want, but they just kind of ignore it,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I don't know, I just thought it was a really good metaphor for spirituality as a whole.
Right. Well, there's Taggart, and then there's Tamara, who's his daughter. And they have a really interesting relationship, because it's not a straight up fatherly daughter relationship. I mean, they're pretty much almost like partners for the most part. Like, how was that for you to write about it, you know?
I mean, you know, Tamara's kind of like my dream daughter. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have kids. I'm not going to have kids. I don't, you know, I can't deal with the first 13 years of their lives. I'm a school teacher. That's about as much as I can do. When they come home, I'm like, go away. But, you know, some of the kids that I've taught over the years through, you know, one circumstance or another have sort of, we've gotten closer than I have with other students. And, you know, one of them now, Mia, she's like my little kid, you know, and, just a, you know, bona fide badass, you know. But she's had to take care of herself, and she's had to take care of herself for a long time. And she's had to take care of her younger sister for a long time. And, like, I grew up with those kids, you know, like, in some way I was one of those kids who, like, had not authority, but, like, responsibility placed on them. Some would say too young, but I'd say, you know, they got it placed on them young, you know. And when that happens, you know, it takes a special kind of parenting to work with that kind of kid, you know. You can't tie their shoelaces for them, you know, like, because that's insulting. That's like, you know, don't, like, I know how to tie my shoes, you know, like, I know how to handle my business, right? And so with those kids, what you do is you're like, okay, you're in charge, be in charge of them. This is what I need. And if they can deliver that to you, then they're like, then they know that you trust them, and they can trust you. And so you start developing this relationship based off of the ability to get shit done, you know? And I've always loved, those kids. And I've always loved those people, competent individuals who can get shit done. And like, that's tomorrow to a T, where it's just like, just tell me what I got to do. Like, I'll get it done. Just tell me how, you know? And Taggart's like, yeah, I got to just let her do it. You know? And so, yeah, she's kind of like my ideal kid. She's like she's a little bit based off of my relationship with Mia, of just being that competent.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I really like, because it's something that's rare, where you see like a young adult even like sparring, but they're sparring together. And that was like a moment of like, oh, those are the teachable moments that they're having as a father and daughter. When they're trying to beat each other up.
you should read the first book. I mean, the first book is when they meet, you know, and like the first time they meet, you know, Tamara tries to kill Taggart. And Taggart's like, oh, for real? Then he tries to kill her. And then he realizes who she is. And he's like, oh, my bad.
Over the baritone, Michelle over Askel, Pat over the Uzi and Glock, life over death. You know what's that term, that's the future, never solo. Hey, let me tell you this again. I could have been one of the most notorious agathe. wicked image and the wicked man them profile. I'm so happy to be Rastafari style, and may overcome the wicked with just a smile. Then me start to live my life and do things worthwhile in a love and harmony. I try not to be vile. Now both the wealth Selassie will provide. Hey, my conscience is clear. Me not nothing to hide. Rastafari could have been one of the most notorious. I got paid by the king, and his grace is so glorious. Shed. Positive actions and a firm bed. We'll get this through, let this through, let us first you. I pledge to be a part of the strong side, the right side, could you be the wrong side? I'm like tell you say, from you can avoid the vibe, slip with the king, then you know you shall slide. I could have been one of the most notorious. I got paid by the king. Never go under. I could have been one of the most notorious. I got saved by the king, and his love is so glorious.
That was amazing. And you just listened to the track was, let me make sure I get this right. Oh, it was called It's Notorious by Turbulence. And before that, we heard Crazy Ballheads by Bob Marley, the legendary Bob Marley. And you're tuned to Literary Soundtrack, and we're listening to Aize Jama Everett, who has a series of books. They're kind of speculative fiction world. It's the Liminal series, and we're talking about the Liminal War. That's under Small Beer Press. And we're going to tune right back in to listen to Aize. He's going to be talking about potential movie options. Maybe. And also the songs that inspired him. So we get to the background of all of that. And then we're almost it's almost time to go. So let's tune back and listen to it.
About this book of the Liminal War, and it's under Small Beer Press, is that the whole book pretty much is music. Like, if there's anything spiritual, it's the music that's like all throughout the whole book. It's pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Like, it jumps from so much, from so many different types of music as well. Like, what was that like? Yeah. I mean, did you really have like specific ideas of like what the types of music, from like you're talking about like a DJ spinning music to like, you know, reggae to even punk music, all that stuff was sort of playing just in this one novel?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a music, you know, like I used to be a DJ for a little bit. Like, I music is everything that Miko says about music is pretty much how I feel about music. I think, like I say, in the beginning there was the word, and I'm like, nope, in the beginning there was the beat. you know, and the beat was a sound and the sound was a word, you know, like words are constructed language, like beats you just feel, you know? And so like, I think music articulates a lot that language can't get across. So when I'm referencing a song, I'm also referencing a feeling, an emotion, you know, a psychic space, if you will. But yeah, it was planned out from the beginning, you know, in terms of like that would be the modus operandi of Nico and, you know, all those fun folk. But yeah, it's funny, I'm reading, I read Victor Laval's Ballad of Black Tom. And there's like so much like blues in there, and it's like I wanted to do that. He did it like 10 times better than I did. And like, I mean, I did so much research. Like I read I can't remember the name of it now, but that Marley biography in order to, I think it's called To Catch a Fire. To catch some of that Marley language. I was going to have Jimmy in there too, Jimi Hendrix, because Jimmy's my spiritual daddy. But it felt like there's one line in the book where Tamara's like, so we went back in time just so you could jam out with like all your favorite musicians. And like, that's beginning to feel like, yeah. So I was like, sorry, Jimmy. I'll fit you into another one, you know.
Is the final book, is this, now this is, so then it's not like a trilogy, like this is, that's going to be the last book. Is it going to come out through Small Beer Press as well?
Yeah. Yep. I'm working on a graphic novel as well. So with John Jennings, I don't know if you've met him, but awesome, amazing artist. He did the covers for, he did the cover for Lemon of War and Entropy of Bones. And we've been working on a graphic novel with some awesome people like David Brame. I'm working on that, getting scripts in on that one. And then after that, I'm about halfway done through first draft of the final liminal book. I don't have a name for it. And then, that'll be it.
And then that'll be it with that world.
Yeah.
So I want to talk, I know that you were talking about Hollywood. Is there, I mean, there was mentions of the options of the book. Is that happening?
Yeah.
What's going on?
I'm just waiting to hear back from people. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, is this, you know, the rights available? I'm like, yep, I have the rights. And they're like, I'd love to check out the books. I'm like, here you go. And then crickets. Like, I don't hear much. So, I mean, it's fine. Everybody's busy. Everybody's got stuff to do. So we'll see. I think if it ever gets to screen, it'll be absolutely amazing. I think people will totally dig it. But, you know, I also understand that it will take a brave studio to put a, black lead on the cover of a action science fiction film. You know, right. That's just the reality of that scenario. Some independent producer, you know, not in the Hollywood system, might be braver, might, you know, want to give it a shot, might be more willing to give it a shot, and that'd be fine as well, you know?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's totally action-packed that you could see it. It's quick paced, but now that we talked about, like, how you were influenced by, like, pulp, it makes complete sense that you just, like, you could read it so quickly. It is, like, a weekend read that you want to see. I could see it translated to the big screen really easily. If only
I'm so
I had
glad
money.
You picked up on that pulp.
Yeah.
Come on, you're all blinging out. You know, didn't you just sign a multi-billion-dollar contract?
Oh, yeah, I really did. I'm rolling in it. So I want to go over the great songs that you have, which are really kind of, they're all different. And I always enjoy this part because I'm always curious to hear the songs that were inspired. And with this book, there's so many songs just within the text itself that I was like curious to see what you came up. So what I'll do is I'm going to say the track and who is it by, and then you can just tell me like one or two things of like why that song is was inspired by. And we're talking about the liminal war, but it could obviously go for the whole series. So the first one is Death Letter Blues, and that's by Sunhouse.
Yes, this is a classic. I mean, so in the book, you know, Robert Johnson is in the book, right? And here's this little interesting, this is how deep I went with research. You ready?
Yes.
Okay, check this out. So Robert Johnson studied under Sunhouse. He sucked. He went away, came back a few years later. He was awesome. Everybody's like, oh, he sold his soul to the devil. Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not important to me. What's interesting is that the place where he recorded his only, you know, his only recordings, they used to try and push, the amount of songs they could get on one side by speeding up the recording process so that the voice actually goes higher. The pitch goes higher in the voice. If you listen to like classically recorded Robert Johnson stuff, it's got this high nasal whiny sound that everybody assumed was just his. Some people have actually like slowed it down and like played what they think it might actually sound like. And he sounds a lot more like Sunhouse. Mm. So this song, I think is like, I think of this song, Death Letter Blues, more like what Robert Johnson actually sounded like, because I don't think anybody could sound that high-pitched nasal for long. The song itself, I mean, that's just a heartbreaker. You know, I got a letter this morning. How do you reckon it read? It said, the girl you love is dead. I said, I got a letter this morning. You know, and you're just like, damn. And, oh, this is a guy going to see, you know, his girl dead on the cooling, you know, like at the morgue. You don't even know how she died. Mm. She's just dead. Mm. And like, it's a gut shot, you know? And so that gut shot, I think, is again, hatch, match, and dispatch. That's where you find magic, you know? Mm. Even in that deep, dark, hurty place, that's where you find magic. That's where you find spirituality.
Mm. So the next song is, and I'm sure I'm going to mess this up, it's Talalit. Yeah. By La Fille de Il Gadad. It was terrible. Do you know how to say it? You can say it.
I mean, hold on, let me look them up because I forgot. it's like I can tell you everything about them, but I can't tell you their name.
La Fille de Il Gadad.
So it's the women of. So yeah, it's Les Filles de Il Gahada, yeah. So it's the women of Il Gahada. So there's this guy, and I can't remember his name, but check him out. It's Sahel Sounds, Sahel Sounds, and he goes through like northern central Africa, recording people and then putting them out on Bandcamp and then splitting the profits with them. And so these are these Tuareg women, like northern Mali-esque Tuareg women, who are singing this style of music that traditionally, before the 1800s or so, was recorded mostly by women, but now is mostly recorded by men. But so these women like are holding this like old tradition, and to me, like, this is that sound could be played in the streets of London, you know, in the savannah of Africa, like in, like, you know, like in the middle of Morocco, like in France. Like, that sound is just is the sound of travel to me.
That's good. And then the next track is Crazy Bald Heads by Bob Marley. Now, Bob Marley is really big in your novel. I don't want to say
anything
more, but he's like pretty integral in there.
Yeah. Well, I think what happens is a lot of people, when they hear Bob Marley now, they just think like love, peace, and hair grease. And you know, there's definitely a part of Marley that was that. But there is also an incredibly militant part of Bob Marley, you know, that was like, did not take shit, you know. It's like a strong man, you know, and I don't want to give away too much from the novel, but like I feel like he spent so much time uplifting the idea of what a black person in the diaspora could be, that he failed to pay attention to his own health, and that's why we lost him so young. You know, but like, you know, I used to wake up Sunday mornings and my mom would just blaring Bob Marley, like telling, like basically like cleaning the house, blaring Bob Marley, and I was like, I hate this dude. And then like, I went to college and I had this actually, the girl that Tamara's mother is based off of in the novel, this chick I went out with in college, she used to love Marley, and I was like, I'm tired of white hippies playing Marley. She's like, first of all, I'm not white. Second of all, you know, why don't you pay attention to his lyrics? Like, why don't you pay, like, she's like, no, like, just take a second and like, check him out again. And I was like, oh, and I was like, oh, this man is speaking directly to my soul. I just needed to shut up and listen. So I got mad love from Marley.
That's good. The next one is Notorious by Turbulence.
Yes. So that song is great. There's two UK British chicks. One of them is the daughter of this incredible, awesome DJ, Congo Natty. But these girls, Phoebe and Nancy, and I first heard them do that song. And it is just, it's the anthem, you know, like it's the anthem of the liminal people. It's like, I could have been one of the most notorious. I got saved by his grace and his love is so glorious, you know? And it's like, ah, to be able to say that, you know, that like I could have torn your shit up, but I got saved. And because I'm saved, like, I love you like you could not believe, you know, like that. It's a promise and a threat at the same time, you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
And then the last one is called Hell or High Water by William Elliott Whitmore.
Yes, and that's in the book actually as well. So I got to meet this dude, and he's just really kind, sweet, amazing guy. When he recorded that album, I can't remember what album it's on, but he had, you know, he had gone through a lot of personal tragedy. I think like his girlfriend or wife had died, his family had died recently, and he had a farm and the farm wasn't doing well. My man just basically sat down and just put his pain out on album. And when you do that, you know, there's this magic that goes along with it, because I don't feel like you can talk pain without also talking the cure. You know, like they just go hand in hand. And I know for me, like, I found this song when my best friend in the world, like, randomly out of the blue committed suicide. And I had like, you know, I was working as a therapist and like did not see it coming at all. And this was one of the, I don't even know. There's like two or three songs that like were just linked to that time and him. And for like years, whenever I heard this song, I just broke down. It didn't matter where it was. And like, I hated the song. And then you know, played it enough that I was like, oh no, this is like a good, like this is for me, that's the way like my friend says goodbye to me. Like every time I hear that song, I think of my friend and I think of like the good times, and it's like a loving tribute to him. So you know, I'm gonna listen to that song for my entire life probably.
And that was Ayize Jama Everett speaking about his musical selections, the songs that inspired his novel, The Liminal War. And that's under Small Beer Press. And we have run out of time. That's right. I want to thank Ayize for a fun interview. That was really fun. And for connecting. And the folks at Small Beer Press, of course. Go buy his book. You could definitely get that. And I will be here next month, Tuesday, June 7th, with another featured author. Definitely stay tuned. And this interview and a lot of the other interviews that I've done They're archived and it'll be available on radiosombra.org. That's Radio Sombra, if I have to say. If I don't want to roll the R's, I will say radiosombra.org. If not, it's radiosombra.org, and you could see all the archives and listed under a literary soundtrack, all the authors that I've interviewed. And thanks for tuning in. I will see you all next month. And we're going to listen to one more track, and that's Telelit by Le Feliz de Ilgehat Dad. Sorry that I butchered that. But the music is amazing. All right. See you guys next month.